I'm Debbie Draby from the Clinical Excellence Commission, and I'm pleased you can join us for this four-part series with Dr. Claire Skinner and Dr. Dane Chalkley. This podcast is part two of a four-part series on M&M leadership and case selection, right material and right people. In this segment on M&M leadership, choosing the right people, Claire and Dane really emphasise the importance of the M&M chair as a senior leadership responsibility. They see the M&M chair as the opportunity for setting the culture within a department and being able to role model safety and quality principles. Claire and Dane talk about the evolution of medical education, and they give some really practical examples on the importance of M&M leadership and the role of facilitation in building and protecting teams and ensuring everyone has a voice and feels valued and heard within the M&M meeting. So I hope you enjoy this segment.
I worry about who leads the M&M. So I think that running the M&M meeting for a team is a senior leadership job. It needs to be carefully selected. Yeah. I worry about teams where this is seen as something that the registrar who rotates in for 6 months can do it.
Yeah.
So I don't think enough attention is paid to this in a lot of teams. This is a senior leadership job. This is an opportunity for setting the culture of your department and role modelling the way we do safety and what's important. The other little thing that we haven't talked about yet is the vast majority of things that we talk about in our M&M are related to the way that people communicate or the way they think. They're not related to technical problems, like problems with knowledge. And I think that's the whole thing, is that the traditional meeting style is very good for remedying deficits in knowledge, to say, right, well, you need to learn this, you need to have this protocol. But what we actually are role modelling here is, right, if you don't know something, it's okay to look it up. It's okay to go and ask a colleague to have a look. So actually, I think there's a broader cultural aspect to the M&M now, which is moving beyond that horrible training culture that many of us grew up with. Into actually, we're all in this together. It's okay to own up to not knowing. It's okay to ask for help. And it's okay to involve the patient in the decision making as well.
It's really challenging to move from those early learning experiences, isn't it? I mean, you just mentioned that you're having flashbacks. You know, that they really are difficult to shift. And particularly if you haven't been exposed to new ideas or new ways of learning or contemporary, you know, principles around safety and quality and human factors. And I think that, would you think that's one of our challenges in terms of getting that senior clinical leadership who may not necessarily have that?
I think those ideas do have quite a good foothold now. And I think it's translating those concepts into and removing tradition for the sake of tradition's sake. And I think there's a lot of that in M&M meetings, I think.
And I think also, I want to acknowledge some of the fantastic, warm, caring, empathetic teachers that I've had through my journey as well. But I think part of the M&M has been a hangover of that old style where you put people on the spot and you ask them questions they can't answer, and you linger until they're uncomfortable. I think that's actually a hangover, and part of this is modernising. I think medical education has come a long way. It's much more inclusive and, you know, psychologically safe than it used to be. I hope it is anyway. But I think the M&M is almost a hangover of the old style, and it's time to actually bring that into modern adult learning.
Absolutely. So it's around that challenge of how to bring that, and you mentioned the importance of the leadership who may or may not necessarily have been exposed to that. I think when we talked last time around supporting the new generation who have come from a much more positive experience in their medical education than possibly you have in terms of the style of learning with new and contemporary ideas around the importance of learning what, you know, what goes well.
Yeah, so insofar as the chairman should then have some idea about learning principles and about pedagogy and understand how people do learn and how medical education has changed. So the chair of an M&M is a big gig. It really is. It's a very important role in terms of, it's a very important role in terms of education. It's also very important in terms of team building and protecting the safety and the psychological well-being of people who are there or who were involved in the case. It cannot be chosen lightly, as Claire said, and if it is chosen lightly, then you're definitely at risk of having a learning experience or a work experience like the ones that Claire and I did when we were growing up in days of yore, where sometimes you just absolutely dreaded even getting in the car and going to work.
Yeah. So for people who may find themselves in that role of chair and potentially feel really out of their depth and are very unfamiliar with, you know, some of these new principles and new and emerging ideas around human factors, and what would you recommend for them? You know, what's some of the things that can help better support them if they're feeling out of their depth in these roles and have been appointed?
Yeah,
not by choice necessarily.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think ultimately, first of all, I would suggest that that person shouldn't really be the chair.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether I consider sort of chairing M&M meetings or being the quality leader is a very important role for someone who's interested in it.
Mm.
Because I don't think you can just crunch numbers and hope for the best. And some of the data behind M&M suggests that meetings can be just dull, boring, or dangerous.
Yeah.
So the psychological well-being of people, and also never follow through with system improvements.
Yeah.
And that in effect is a waste of an hour or waste of an opportunity. I think what you need to do is you need to have a basis and a background in understanding A, human factors, and B, the evidence base behind how we approach quality and safety. And I think if you don't really have that background, then you need to ask someone who understands it.
Yeah. So how do you learn that? That's what I've been thinking while you've been talking. And, you know, why have you and I learned that? And I think I probably learned it because I'm interested in people and systems. And I went, you know, these are all ideas that have come up in the course of my work, and I chose to read into them.
Mm.
And there's a lot of, I think, you know, you could read the work of Pat Cross-Curry and some of the clinical reasoning stuff, the work of Stephen Shorrock and Sid Decker and the guys in the patient safety world talking about safety one and safety two. So there's a lot of literature out there.
Yeah.
I hope that some of the CEC material will actually help people as they get into these roles to go, right, here's a good snapshot of the sort of stuff you need to know.
Yeah.
I think in general in clinical leadership, we haven't actually, this is actually everyone's job. Clinical leadership is everyone's job. And I don't think we've thought enough about some of this stuff as being called clinical business. Yeah. And I think it genuinely is.
Yeah.
But the person that chairs the M&M, I agree, Dane, everyone who speaks in the M&M, everyone who chairs the M&M must have an interest. The interest is fundamental. Without that, you're not going to go anywhere. And I think once you've got an interest, there's a whole bunch of stuff you can do for your self-development to make sure that you actually understand some of the principles behind it.
And those core principles around people and understanding systems, and they may or may not necessarily have that familiarity.
Yep. And also, like every hospital will have a clinical governance unit, and there will be some expertise in there, and you can reach out there and get some help as well. They're quite safety one focused at the moment.
Yep.
I think, you know, often the clinical governance unit will be safety one focused. Mm. They're reviewing the IMS, they're doing the RCAs, they're reviewing the QIDS data. And often you'll have a clinical redesign manager who's much more safety two focused. And I dream of them coalescing, I have to admit, because actually we need both working together. They don't work well in isolation. That's interesting for me as chair, Dane, and I'd be interested in what you do with this. I think it's important as chair that you do unpick your own mistakes.
Oh, you've got to be vulnerable.
You've got to be vulnerable.
And
that's probably hard. It's hard for me. I'm sure it's hard for you.
Yeah.
But you have to make sure you're part of the meeting. Like you've got skin in the game. You can't just be there being the remote person. You need to go, oh, actually, that was me.
Yeah.
And role model that you look it up and you don't know everything and things don't go perfectly.
Yeah. And you know, and once you've done it for a few years, okay, you know, you can find a mistake that you produced out of your bag of tricks that in coincidental with every single thing that comes on in that meeting. I've done that. I've been there. I remember I've done that. And you need to have that. And you need to have a senior clinician group who are ready to put their hand up and say, I did that. I've done that. I've been there. And it was difficult, but I've learned from it. And,
I find that that's a important facilitation point as well. I don't like it where you end up with a row of consultants in one row and everyone else in the room, and the consultants is almost like the interview panel doing your exam. I think you can't do that. You need to make sure they're in the mix and not actually just marking everyone else's work.
So thinking about that, where people are positioned and they're contributing in the same way, so there's that sense of equality, and we talk about power dynamic.
But another thing is who has the time to be there and who's vulnerable to getting paged out. It needs to be protected time. And you need to know that you're coming to the meeting, and the only reason you're going to leave the meeting is literally an internal disaster.
was a really carefully and very considered process. And I know we've talked in the past about you can't have a one-size-fits-all. Yes, we do have these guidelines that are statewide, but it's around being able to, as you said, get to know your group and what their needs are and then the context in which you work with.
I think you're right, and guidelines are guidelines. They're not law.
Yep.
And ultimately, I think within the CEC's document, it does talk about, you know, the application of this to you as an individual, as about understanding what the core principles behind quality and safety are and how you should apply those to your team to ensure that people learn and that people are looked after.
I think you can be too prescriptive with what's in an M&M basically. Mm. And I think it's really good to have guidelines because that can help someone structure what they're doing. But you will, as a team leader, you will need to pick and choose what's relevant to your team, what's going on in the department, things like that. So I think, it's important that guidelines are guidelines because I think if you're too prescriptive, there's a tendency to the quantitative, which we talked about isn't relevant to everybody and people don't understand it well.
Yeah.
The quantitative can usually be provided on one or two slides by an email. Like, it doesn't need to be in a meeting necessarily unless there's a major trend. So I think you can, you know, you have to be careful about making this another checklist exercise.
Yeah.
It's better off. Basically, I would see the M&M guidelines as a model of care.
Yeah.
You can choose what works for your department, and here's some resources, as opposed to you must do it this way every time.
Yeah.
And if the quality and safety in your particular department is dependent on your M&M meeting, then you've fallen short on your obligation to provide effective quality and safety. It should be my opinion, the M&M meeting should be the educational outpouring of all the quality and safety efforts that are going on behind the scenes. And so it isn't the quality safety isn't dependent on the M&M.
Yeah.
The M&M is dependent entirely on the quality and safety. And it's an opportunity to share new processes, to share new systems, to share the good.
Mm. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about facilitation because I think as well, like you talked about everyone's voice being valuable, but I think we all know that things aren't equal in the meeting room.
Mm.
And that's even more so now we're in a virtual environment where some people have better tech than others, and it tends to be consultants and senior nurses who have access to better tech and participate more than often our junior doctors and our nursing staff and our, particularly other people around the department. They're participating with less good tech where it's harder to speak up. But facilitation is really important. So there's a lot of schadenfreude in M&M meetings. There's a lot of, thank goodness that wasn't me, and people can express that by picking on the person, like, even if you haven't named who was involved in the case. Often in an ED, people know the case and they know who was involved. So you need to really make sure that people know that there's a degree, you know, you've got to model the values, you've got to model the communication style. As the chair, you've got to really keep your eye on the room.
Yeah.
Again, more difficult in a virtual environment, so we need to be mindful of that, but keep your eye on the room, make sure that the loud voices are balanced out. Make sure you draw out the right people, but not in a way that makes them feel embarrassed or ashamed. So if you can see that someone wants to talk, ask them the sort of question that makes them feel safe to contribute. And I think facilitation in the M&M is really, really delicate and needs to be done very well.
And I think that goes to choosing the right speakers as well. If you're not the person presenting, then you need to prepare. This is a potentially a very delicate situation. It's a delicate room where people could get hurt. So you need, I think, to prepare. And your speakers need, I think, to be multidisciplinary, but at the same time need to understand the basic tenets of the meeting, which is let's learn from this and let's protect everyone's safety. Mm-hmm. So you have to have people, and that needs preparation, and that means actually having a bit of time before the meeting with the presenters and finding out what their idea of how things will go is and what their focal point is going to be with their presentation.
Thanks for listening to this podcast series on M&M leadership and case selection, right material and right people. I really hope you enjoyed it. Please note that this is one of a four-part series, and I hope that you have the opportunity to listen to the other three segments as I continue this conversation with Dane and Claire and explore the conversation around choosing the right cases. Dane and Claire talk about the importance of leadership in M&Ms. They also talk about their experiences of safety sciences and the importance of human factors. We explore multidisciplinary participation And it's a real opportunity to listen in and really hear the level of vulnerability and experiences that Dane and Claire talk about as they explore their M&M leadership. Listen as Claire and Dane discuss their insights and the lessons learned that they've had along the way in supporting M&Ms. I'm Debbie Draby from the Clinical Excellence Commission, and I'm pleased that you can join us in this conversation with senior leaders as they explore the guiding principles of effective morbidity and mortality meetings in action. This podcast series has been developed to explore the experiences and insights from leading M&M meetings. Look out for more podcasts as we continue this conversation with clinicians as they share their journey and learning. I hope you find it useful, and if you'd like to contribute to this conversation, please let me know. Thank you.